Aloha. This is Catherine Cruz. It is Thursday, May 8th. Today, the conversation is back out on the road on the edge in Waikiki. Earlier this year, we took you out to the Diamond Head side of Waikiki, where we looked at sea level rise and concerns about groundwater inundation and the disappearing shoreline. Today, we focus on the other side, the Eba'an, where emergency work is about to get underway on a seawall that threatens to undermine part of a legacy hotel, the Halekulani. We also take a closer look at the midterm and long-term fixes to coastal erosion. The area is at a crossroads when it comes to dealing with an eroding coastline. For the next hour, we'll be digging into the sand on this end of Waikiki, known as Kawehiwehi. You're tuned to The Conversation here on Hawaii Public Radio, Hawaii Talks. I'm Catherine Cruz. Today, we're out on the road and are broadcasting live from the Outrigger Waikiki Beach Resort. We're focusing on the edge of what some know as Kawehiwehi. Emergency work is about to get underway in a narrow lane in Waikiki near Fort DeRussy. Erosion has taken its toll on the beach and land under one of the buildings of the Halekulani. The emergency repairs involve a 70-foot section of seawall owned by the resort. The situation has become a public hazard and a potential liability for taxpayers as there is a public right-of-way involved. On the day we were out there recently, a Canadian family was braving the hazardous path because they were following the GPS directions on their phone to get to an Outrigger restaurant for breakfast. Here's Damien.
Where are you trying to get to?
We're trying to get to Monkey Pod for some breakfast. Yeah.
And you use Google Maps?
Google Maps, and it brought us down by this... right by the water, and this quite unstable, crab-ridden, rocky shore. Interesting journey.
Well, you're quite brave.
Yeah, very brave.
And minutes after his family made their way past the crumbling seawall, another visitor from Los Angeles came running through the public access path. He'd been flying a drone along the shoreline when it hit the seawall and went down. He sheepishly admitted he raced down there to retrieve it, even though the signs indicated the path was closed. Just a few weeks ago, the issue of beach replenishment and the seawall hazards came up at the Waikiki Neighborhood Board meeting. Here's board member Sarah Worth.
Unfortunately, some areas were given more sand than others. For example, Kukio and the Royal Hawaiian, and my sub-district wasn't seeing any over the last couple decades. So my concern is that, yes, you can see, I mean, the fact that the walkway crumbled into the ocean and nothing was done, I was shocked.
Rick Egged of the Waikiki Improvement Association offered this about the scope of work that needs to be done to address the larger problems.
There's funding in this year's legislature, which the senator and Rep. Tam have got it put in there for to begin this project. I think there's $5 million appropriated. And that's not going to be the whole cost of the project. The project's probably going to run around $50 million. So it's not going to be cheap, but that will give us a beach along that entire shoreline. And, of course, walkway. You'll be able to traverse it as well.
We were down in the area of the Halekulani with coastal geologist Dolan Eversole. He's with the University of Hawaii Sea Grant Program. He's been tapped to be the beach coordinator for the Waikiki Special Improvement District Association.
So we're here at the beach right-of-way between the Halekulani Hotel and the Outrigger Reef Hotel. This is a City and County of Honolulu Parks Department beach right-of-way, known as Beach Right-of-Way Number 141A. And what we're seeing here today is a result of several years' worth of erosion that appears to be accelerating in more recent time. We're here at the ocean end of this beach right-of-way, which has been pretty severely eroded. There's a concrete walkway that has collapsed, and the rubble of that concrete walkway remains. Access through here is restricted. Technically, is a closed walkway, although people are still finding their way through here. There is a shared and universal concern that there is a public safety hazard with this beach right-of-way and the adjacent walkway on the Haleakalani seawall. And there is interest and efforts underway to temporarily close this walkway for public access due to safety reasons. The beach has deflated about 5 or 6 feet here, where the sand used to be up to the top of the seawall, and there was really no transition from the walkway to the beach, whereas now it's about 5 or 6 feet down to the water, so you literally would have to climb up over the wall and over this concrete rubble. I think it's fair to say this is a less than ideal situation, and clearly because of public health and safety, it warrants a temporary closure till this area can be fixed up. Because of this episodic erosion that seems to be coming and going, but it more recently is more of a permanent erosion, it has now undermined a portion of their retaining wall and the seawall on the seaward side. I understand that there are efforts to do some repairs to the wall. This wouldn't really change the configuration of the wall, but to simply patch the holes that we're looking at here today. That would be on the immediate horizon, a short-term fix to repair the wall with some temporary repair to the oceanside walkway where the concrete slabs have become misaligned and there's some cavities and things like that. So that will greatly help with a temporary fix to the walkway, but there's also interest and efforts underway to develop an interim solution to try to remedy the overarching problem of erosion here, which is an ongoing and chronic problem throughout this area. And what that interim or temporary solution looks like is yet to be determined, but there's a group of stakeholders here in Waikiki, including the Waikiki Beach Special Improvement District Association, to investigate potential strategies to mitigate some of the erosion here. And really the intent is to stabilize this beach cell in order to restore it to even a former configuration of like a small pocket beach, maybe 20 or 30 feet wide, that existed here maybe as recently as 5 years ago. So that's a goal of an interim solution, is to stabilize the area, place some sand with the hopes that that will last a couple to several years. It could last longer as needed until the longer term effort to stabilize this area with larger T-head groins can get implemented.
Okay, so that's the hopefully the long-term fix. But let's back up a couple of steps, because the interim fix, you folks are exploring accessing sand, you know, offshore to create that little beach, but the sand's just not compatible.
That's right. There's been interest in doing what's called a small-scale beach restoration here in the Kawehi-Wehi area, which is the area in front of Haleakalani and Outrigger Reef. And there was some preliminary exploration and testing of the sand in the Haleakalani Channel. This is the sand channel that exits from the Sheraton Waikiki out into the Threes surf spot. And the preliminary results of that investigation suggest that the sand is too gravelly, so that's too large, which is a much better problem than the sand being too fine, by the way. Larger sand grain typically stays put longer. It's more stable. But in this case, it was not so much sand as gravel. We're looking at potential options to filter and screen out some of the gravel, because there is beach quality sand in the channel. We just need to more strategically and maybe surgically remove that sand using a pump of some kind. This is a potential project. There are no plans to do this yet, but one idea is to utilize the sand in the Haleakalani Channel, pump it back onto the beach, or alternative sand sources that could be utilized to restore a beach of maybe what it looked like 10 years ago in this area.
And then folks are probably wondering, okay, we saw all the sand replenishment down there on the Kuhio end. The question is, you know, who's going to pay for it, right? Will it be the hotels? Will it be government?
Right. So the thinking with the stabilization of this area and any type of mitigation work would be potentially a joint project between the state, in this case, the Department of Land and Natural Resources, and the Waikiki Beach Special Improvement District is a willing partner to potentially cost share these strategies and the projects that may result. And then we can talk about other cost sharing measures between the adjacent landowners yet to be determined. But from my conversations, there seems to be a receptiveness and a willingness to cost share these projects. We don't know what that project looks like yet or even how much it would cost, but one potential strategy is to place sand, possibly using that Haleakalani sand channel, but we need something to hold it in place. Otherwise, there's a high probability it will just erode off the beach fairly quickly. And one strategy is to put in a temporary groin or some type of stabilizing structure so that the sand that's placed will stay there longer. Not necessarily a permanent fix, but a multi-year, we'll call it temporary 3 to 5 year type of structure that could be in turn complementary and compatible to the longer term, larger groins that are proposed in this area.
Don't go away. We will hear more about those longer term solutions from C. Grant Sterling-Obersall, who's been tapped by the Waikiki Special Improvement District Association to work on a plan to help with the chronic erosion and needed beach restoration. And full disclosure, a note, both Haleakalani and Outrigger Hospitality Group are underwriters of HPR. If you're just joining us, the conversation is out on the road. We're broadcasting live from the Outrigger Waikiki, just down the beach from where emergency construction on a seawall is about to begin. We're hearing from coastal geologist Dolan Ebersol, who is working with the Waikiki Special Improvement District Association to address the coastal erosion of area beaches. Here's Ebersol on what can be done in the long run.
The longer-term strategy for this area is a proposed three rock T-head groin structures that would be then placed with about 60,000 cubic yards of offshore sand. And just to give you context, the last beach maintenance project in the Royal Hawaiian where sand was pumped in, that was about 20,000 cubic yards. So the total volume would be about three times that. The sand would not be sourced from that Royal Hawaiian beach, but instead potentially somewhere off of this area in the Hilton or Kavehivehi area, so somewhere closer to this side as opposed to using sand that is intended to be used for future beach nourishment in the Royal Hawaiian area.
And, you know, the erosion here is nothing new. And a part of the problem is that, you know, these seawalls were built, you know, a long time ago, and that's just accelerated things along with the rising sea level. Like you said, this has changed even in the couple of weeks that you were last year.
That's right. I visit this area frequently to keep eyes on it and monitor it, and each time is a little bit worse. I come here maybe once a week, and it seems like it used to come and go seasonally, and now it's not returning. So we're in a triggered state of what appears to be a perpetual state of erosion, and as that shoreline and the sand erodes away, it is slowly progressing landward through this beach right away. So each time I come, it's about 5 more feet landward, and it reveals more of this debris that we're seeing, collapsed concrete and old structures and things like that. One of the things I did want to highlight here, there is a state bill that would help with a situation like this in that it redefines what beach restoration is in the statute that defines beach restoration, to broaden it to include things like coastal dune restoration, not just the placement of sand, but also the removal of material, the derelict material, like what we see here today. So by state definition, if this bill was to become an act, the state could implement debris removal efforts under the definition of what is beach restoration, which I think is a good way to support beach restoration by cleaning up old material at the same time.
And basically move faster on a problem, because if you've got multiple stakeholders in this, you know, city, private, that it just makes things a little bit more complicated.
Yeah, that's right. And the creation of the Waikiki Beach Special Improvement District back in 2015 was intended to do just that. It was intended to, one, create a special improvement district that could assess taxes in Waikiki that would then be pooled and used to cost share projects with the state. And in fact, that has happened three times now with three different projects in Waikiki, 50% paid for by the Beach Improvement District. But perhaps more importantly than just cost sharing, The Beach Improvement District serves to illustrate the need to have a facilitating partner that can help intervene, it can communicate to stakeholders, it can talk to a lot of different people and help support efforts that would largely be the burden be placed on just the state to do these alone. So I would point to this partnership between the Beach Improvement District and the state as a successful partnership, and it seems to be working quite well in helping to not only cost share, but to streamline these projects.
And then the Department of Business, Economic Development and Tourism will take the lead in making these things work.
That's right. So the longer term strategy for the T-Head Groynes, that project and the associated environmental impact statement has now been transferred officially over to the Department of Business, Economic Development and Tourism. And so that project has historically been in the Department of Land and Natural Resources, is now in DBED. So that's another example of this successful partnership between the Beach Improvement District and, let's just say, state government, whether it's DLNR or DBED, and we have a very close working relationship with those agencies.
Well, as we're standing here talking, there's a dozen surfers that are paddling out to the breaks out there because the waves are great today. But I know that there's a concern that the beach nourishment projects may have affected the surf that made Waikiki so famous. And, you know, you surf too. You're a water person. So, you know, how do you address the critics that are really worried about, you know, these projects?
Yeah, those are really important questions about the environmental impact of doing any type of marine construction. In this case, with beach restoration, is often thought to be the most beneficial type of mitigation. You can build structures, you can place sand. Another adaptation technique is to simply move things out of the way. That's a very difficult endeavor. This idea of managed retreat is a good long-term strategy in almost every case, but it's a difficult conversation to have in Waikiki because there's so much investment into this dense urban infrastructure. But with respect to environmental impacts, that is an important question, and we should be asking those critical questions of what will this do to the marine environment, to coral reefs, and to recreational opportunities like surfing. As a lifelong surfer myself, I also ask those questions and have been reassured in what I've seen in the science behind the environmental impact statement. My questions have been largely addressed. I'm confident that the ongoing beach maintenance is not a major environmental detriment to surfing or the environment. Is it perfect? No. Is it our best strategy? I believe yes. That's our best short-term to mid-term strategy. There are things that we can be doing to look at using the highest quality sand and perhaps doing some type of treatment to screen out the fine material, things like that. But overall, as a surfer, I do surf in the Queens and Canoes area. I've seen slight changes to the inside of those surf breaks where the sand is migrating, but I don't really see a bit major change to the reef breaks themselves. And if you think about how the waves break, they break on coral reef. Unless you were to completely bury the area in sand, I would be hard-pressed to see a major change to those surf breaks. I do understand and recognize that other people feel that there has been a negative change to some of the surf breaks. In particular, the left at Canoes is thought to have changed. I don't necessarily see that myself, but I'm willing to have eyes on it, and I'd like to learn more about that.
And there will be ample opportunity for the public to weigh in as this project moves forward.
That's right. So with the T-Head Groyne project in the Kavehivehi Halekulani area, as well as the ongoing beach maintenance project in the Royal Hawaiian, there'll be lots of opportunity for the public to understand what the terms and conditions and the scope of it is, as well as provide comments directly to DBED, in this case, on their concerns. And people like myself that work at the university, we pay close attention to the science and the engineering behind this and are available to help answer questions if there are questions about what this means or what it could potentially do. Again, those are very important questions that we should be asking and carefully scrutinizing any type of marine construction. In this case, from what I've seen in all the environmental documentation, it seems to be relatively benign. And the other side of that is it's very clear that we have to do something. We can't just let it erode, because now we're seeing all types of impacts to infrastructure, not just private infrastructure, but public infrastructure is now being damaged. And there are environmental impacts from letting this erode. Eventually, if we let it go long enough, we'll start to see the destruction of things like sewer lines and utilities and things like that. And that's in no one's interest to see that get damaged.
That was Dolan Ebersole from the University of Hawaii Sea Grant Program. He serves as the Waikiki Beach Management Coordinator for the Special Improvement District Association.
Support for HPR comes from Nereid Hawaii, which supports nonprofits that are providing affordable housing solutions to convert renters into homeowners, such as Hawaiian Community Assets. NereidHawaii.com.
Federal funding to nonprofit public media is increasingly under threat. These cuts would devastate communities across the country and their access to trusted and free information. Here at Hawaii Public Radio, these cuts would affect our ability to inform, inspire, and connect the people of Hawaii. Support Hawaii Public Radio with a donation at hawaiipublicradio.org.
Support for HPR comes from Osher Lifelong Learning Institute, with courses for ages 50 and older at UH Manoa, community colleges, and online beginning June 2nd. OLLIUHM.org.
A better understanding of the complexity of private and public land and public access, we took a tour of the area in Waikiki via Google Maps with the Department of Land and Natural Resources. Mike Kane is with the Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands, and if you're just joining us, the area in question is called Kawehiwehi. He says the state is behind an effort to return to the original place names, as opposed to just referring to the name of the nearest hotel.
Seawalls went up in this area around 1910 and 1920. Which immediately led to increased beach loss. And since then, when we've had a beach, it's been a beach that's been created through imported sand. There are walkways along the top of the seawall. They're not formal easements, but because the public has used them for close to 100 years, the courts recognize them as a public right-of-way. Our understanding at DLNR is that the seawalls remain private, and that it's the responsibility of the resorts to repair their seawall. And then we understand that it will be our responsibility to improve the walkway on top with railings, with a smoother surface. At the moment, the Halekulani walkway is a bit dangerous, and we can't do our surface repairs until they stabilize the wall itself. The boundary wall between the Halekulani and the beach right-of-way is where we see a lot of significant damage. And we see this wall actually starting to fail. It was a wall that was buried under the sand for decades, so we weren't even aware that it was there. So it wasn't even designed for a walkway. It never had railings, but tourists and locals continue to use it. We did issue an emergency permit to Halekulani to repair just that section. And we expect that work to commence as soon as they have the necessary rights of entry. They're cleared with the state. I think they still need to work with the county to stage in the beach right of way. So that area will be closed while the work proceeds. For the other walkway, we understand that Halekulani will be preparing a regular conservation district use application for repairs to that wall. Once those are done, we can look at fixing the railings and making lateral access safer. We also have issues with lateral access at the boundary between the Sheraton seawall and Gray's Beach. There's a dangling set of stairs that end a few feet above the water. So that has been closed for a number of years. Right now, we do have a contract to prepare some designs for an integrated solution to allow for safe pedestrian access along this whole stretch.
Right, and that's key because public safety is paramount.
Public safety, and we've always been able to walk along the shoreline. And it's our, you know, one of our missions is to protect public access, lateral access on the shoreline. And what's challenging here is the final design will involve multiple jurisdictions. It will involve county land, private land, and state land. So our hope is that by doing one integrated design, we can get that done, and the next year, lock everybody in a room, and beef it out, figure out who pays for what, whose responsibilities are what.
And for right now, though, because we've got an emergency situation with the erosion threatening, you know, one of Halekulani's buildings, that has to be fixed ASAP.
Correct, correct. And for emergency permits, for those we want to see an immediate threat to the public health, safety, or welfare. And we felt that this was, so that emergency permits, we bypass public comment, we consider them exempt from needing an EA. We try to get them out in 2 or 3 days to address an immediate emergency. There are other threats to the public health and safety throughout Waikiki, but these are issues that have been building up for a decade. So we don't see the need to do an emergency permit and bypass the proper processes. When I mentioned the design study we're doing, that will be in the medium term. That will provide stability. We want the consultant to have some freedom to be creative, and I don't want to force a single solution. There is a long-term proposal to build the tea groins in this area and to do beach nourishment. That would create a series of perched beaches. That has been in the work since the 1980s, and it's been passed agency to agency. Like every decade, a new agency takes it over. Our goal right now, or my recommendation would be, let's look at the short-term and mid-term goals, because I don't know when or if that will happen.
And there are lots of issues to consider. I mean, I know we've heard from the surfers that, you know, you're going to change the surf conditions and what made Waikiki famous in the first place. And so they're a little leery about this beach nourishment project. And we have seen beach nourishment work further down in Waikiki. And correct me if I'm wrong, but there was some sampling that was done offshore to see if the sand would match up, and it's not quite right. It's a bit more coarse, I think, than what is found on the beach today.
It was beyond a little bit more coarse. It was gravel. It did not meet the barest minimum standards for small-scale beach nourishment. And we would not have been able to issue a clean water certification for that. So that proposal is dead. The two sand sources we know of are offshore or quarry sand. There's Pacific Aggregate Quarry on the Waianae side has beach quality sand. It is expensive, and usually construction companies can pay more than the state can pay. Offshore sand is equally expensive to bring into shore, and that's environmentally, that's our preferred option, but it doesn't always make economic sense. Like once we stage offshore, we might as well do a large project.
To make it worthwhile.
Yeah, to make it worthwhile. Like the cost benefit doesn't appear to work out for the small scale projects.
And then it just remains to be seen what actually materializes, because one idea is to put in the three groins, right, and to expand the beach area. And make it pleasant for everybody and tourists and locals alike. But that's a bit further out then.
It's a bit further out, and really right now the ball is in DBED's court. Department of Business and Economic Development has taken ownership of the overall project. So our office, DLNR, we're a regulatory agency, so the permits will still come through us, and we will still be making recommendations to our board on the projects. But the actual project proponent will be another office. I mean, Waikiki is a recreation area. It is one of our main economic engines. So it was felt that it was appropriate that they would manage these types of projects, at least for Waikiki.
And are they involved in the short term, this emergency fix, or more just the middle and long term?
We had some money left over from a CIP project that didn't materialize. And so we're investing that money in doing the design for the short-term fix, but just the design. In terms of who pays for what, they will certainly be in the room while we discuss it. If it's state, I assume it would be a CIP project. And then a senator will assign to one of us.
Anything else that you think would be important to underscore about this area as we look at dealing with the harsh realities of coastal erosion and rising sea level?
The harsh reality is that this damage, the damage we're seeing, is entirely caused by us. There's a tendency to blame everything right now on rising seas, and there is that element, of course, but the problem in Waikiki is that the offshore reef flats have been dredged. The problem is that seawalls were built across the beach, thus impounding the sand and not allowing a beach to breathe. So this is an artificial engineered shoreline. And if we want a beach, we'll have to manage it and nourish it. I do get frustrated that it's easy to say, oh, this isn't our fault, it's sea level rise, it's sort of this cosmic problem. But, you know, we watch these hotels and resorts do $80 million renovations without doing any mitigation on their side for how to protect against the waves that are crashing against their wall. I do push back sometimes against the idea that we can blame climate change for everything. It's not the only issue.
We help to create the problem.
Correct. So one other interesting idea we're looking at, and I don't know if this will work or not, so we'll study it, is between the Halekulani Channel and Fort DeRussy, a channel was dredged sometime in the 1900s, I believe 1907, to bring cannons into Fort DeRussy. And those channels are not used right now. The dredging of the offshore reef of Waikiki is one of the early things that changed the currents, changed the patterns of how our beaches breathed. So people have asked that if we restore the reef flat in this area, there's a theory that more sand would be retained in the area and that it might mitigate some of the waves that are hitting the hotels. And this is in the Fort DeRussy area. To me, it's an intriguing enough idea that we want to follow through. So our first step is to model what happens if we do restore or fill in this reef flat, you know, with a sort of artificial reef. What impact will that have on waves and currents? So I don't want to promise big things, but it's something we need to look at everything. And I thought that was an interesting idea. So that will be part of our, when we study public safety improvements in the area, we've asked our consultant to model that.
That was Michael Kane, Administrator of the Office of Conservation and Coastal Lands at DLNR, talking about work being proposed to deal with disappearing sands on a man-made beach and the possibility of creating a new beach on the Fort DeRussy end of Waikiki. The conversation, C.W. Gibson went out to that exact spot on the shoreline and met someone who not only works there, but also surfs in Waikiki. He describes the changes that he's seen over the last decade.
My name is Matt. I'm from Waikiki, but I live in Waikiki now.
You work here at Waikiki Shore Beach Services. How long have you worked here?
About a year and a half.
And so have you noticed anything about the shoreline here in that time?
It's disappearing. Yeah, used to be able to walk pretty much all the way down to the outrigger reef. Now it's the walls, like the boardwalk and everything is all broken down, so can't do that anymore. Also, to the right here, going towards the Hilton, you can see there's some stairs over there. Those were never showing before. It was covered with sand. So yeah, a lot's changed in a year.
And do you get questions from visitors who sort of notice that they can't sort of walk the shoreline?
Every single day, all the time, at least 20 times a day, minimum. Just explain, it's global warming, yeah. But they always tell us, oh yeah, we were here, you know, a couple of years ago and we were able to walk all the way down the beach and what happened? Yeah, so erosion.
Yeah, long-term visitors noticing the changes and telling you about them, yeah?
Absolutely, yeah, all the time, yes.
How long have you been surfing here?
Probably about 10 plus years. There definitely was a big sandbar formed over there like a few years ago when they were doing the sand replenishment. But as far as the waves, they kind of stayed the same since most of the waves out of this side are all reef breaks anyway. But yeah, as far as that aspect, no, not really. It's pretty consistent still out there. Although there's pockets of sand where there was no pockets of sand, but it's all inshore. It doesn't really affect the waves too much.
As we heard earlier, for the first time, the long-term response to the Waikiki Beach erosion is being put on the doorstep of a DBED, the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism. Mary Alice Evans heads the Office of State Planning and represents DBED as it takes the lead on the long-term fixes and the Waikiki Resiliency Plan.
DBED will take the lead because it's part of our economic sustainability role. Waikiki Beach is part of the commercial critical area for the visitor industry, and of course 22,000 residents there that need to be protected as well. So DBED is all in, and we've been working very closely with DLNR and happy to work with the neighborhood board, working with, you know, the other private sector partners. Very much this is a partnership project.
Yes, I mean, because for this emergency project, it's Halekulani, but you know, Outrigger's affected, Sheraton's affected with their infinity pool, and so on. It's pretty critical that we pay attention and not wait till there's an emergency situation.
Agreed. DLNR, before they asked DBED to take the lead, went ahead and contracted for a environmental impact statement, a programmatic environmental impact statement, to look at the range of protective actions that could be considered, and that final EIS was accepted by the governor. So we now have the ability to move forward with planning for, and that, in my mind, that's community engagement. That's going back to the neighborhood board, which we went to in October to explain DBED's role and the work that we were doing on the EIS at the time. And so now we want to go back to the community and discuss the actions that are covered by the final environmental impact statement and get their thoughts on what would be acceptable to address the long-range plan. The public access walkway that, as you know, DLNR has issued an emergency permit to Halekulani to start work on that immediately. That's critical. That's something that DLNR can do because they have the ability to issue emergency permits for work in the conservation district. DBED's role is that longer range one, taking the lead on beach maintenance and restoration. And so we're looking at what the final EIS outlines as potential actions, and that's what we'll be discussing with the community. Once there is some consensus around an action, then DBED will take the lead in applying for a permit. Now, we need to apply to the Board of Land and Natural Resources. They are the ones that oversee the conservation district and would be approving an application for a permit. Once we have permits, then we'll be working in partnership with DLNR to complete design work on the approved action to go ahead with construction.
And would DBED's responsibility also stretch to, let's say, the projects that are happening around the Alawai Canal?
Not at this time, no. I think that isn't one of DBED's areas. I suspect that falls under the Division of Ocean Recreation and Boating in DLNR. That's the harbor area. And then the Alawai Canal itself, I think that's a city responsibility.
Yes, and I know, you know, Army Corps of Engineers is involved, but I know that they said, as part of the back and forth, you know, building that 8-foot-high wall to protect our economic engine, you know, in Waikiki, there's a serious spillover. So I just wasn't sure if that had been involved in any of the conversations with your office.
No, it has not. And the Office of Planning and Sustainable Development is representing DBED in this project. We're taking on the planning component because, and that includes permitting, because that's within the scope of planning. So we will work with partners on design and construction.
And you used to be a deputy over at DBED, correct?
Yep.
Yes, and then you're also with the Sustainability Commission as well?
Yeah, I'm co-chair of the State Climate Commission.
I know we have heard that sometimes rising sea levels are blamed for the coastal erosion when that's not the full picture because of the seawalls and that history.
There's a lot of factors. There's subsidence, the fact that Waikiki used to be a wetland and now is due to the dredging out of the Alawai Canal and then using that for fill. It's not the most solid of a foundation, but we think there's subsidence, there's high tide movement of sand, and also storm damage, taking sand out. Just a lot of different factors there that are making it necessary to protect Waikiki.
And there have been numerous studies of that area, you know, the RAP report and others, and the ideas of, you know, managed retreat, you know, not an easy thing to do. Lots of tough questions to
our
answer.
Our office is grappling with that, with doing some scoping of, you know, how to consider managed retreat, not just for Waikiki, and not specifically for Waikiki, but around all the coastlines around the islands. I will say that managed retreat is a last resort, not a first resort. And so with Waikiki, we're looking at protective actions, not at removal actions.
Yes, and because that whole area was man-made or engineered, I guess there's a price to pay and a kuleana to step up.
Yeah, the fact that it's a constructed beach, not a natural beach, means it also doesn't have backshore sand dunes that could then become a new beach, you know, with natural coastal erosion processes. Everything about it is different from what you might see, say, on the North Shore or parts of West Maui that are experiencing coastal erosion. In Waikiki, what we want is to maintain that beach because it provides a protective barrier to, you know, the community of Waikiki. You could call it nature-based. Sand itself absorbs the force of the waves, but it has to be combined with other designs to keep the sand there. And so that's part of what the final EIS covers, are actions that can help with that.
How far out is the final EIS, you think?
It's actually been accepted by the governor. It's done. It's online, and it's about 1,100 pages, just light reading for a slow day. It covers every possible impact that beach restoration, improvement, and maintenance projects could impact the environment.
Okay, and is there anything else that you think will be important to underscore as we look at this area and what we may need to do down the road?
Well, I'd like to frame it, I think, in the way that our partner Sea Grant up at the university did. We like to think of, you know, the protective actions as a sequence of phased adaptive actions. You don't have to do the most extreme one first. You look at what the risks are and take an action that will protect against those. And then as time goes on, you reassess. And we're looking right now at actions that may protect Waikiki up through 2050, maybe a little longer if we're lucky. But we recognize that this is a long-term commitment, and we will be revisiting it as our climate changes and our ocean water continues to challenge that beach.
That was Mary Alice Evans, head of the Office of State Planning, which has been tapped by the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism to manage future beach resiliency projects. Evans says with the recent passage of the so-called green fee, that will help. The fee would raise funds through dedicating a portion of a tax on hotel rooms and now cruise lines to help offset impacts of the visitor industry on the environment and to prioritize beach resiliency along our engineered shoreline that is Waikiki. The conversation C.W. Gibson spoke with the catamaran captain out in front of the Outrigger Reef, and he described how the changing shoreline has affected his business.
Ryan Smith is my name. I'm one of the beach catamaran captains out here.
And so how long have you been at that?
Be 9 years now.
9 years. So in 9 years, have you noticed any changes to the shoreline here?
Oh, absolutely. We've lost tons of beach. I mean, 9 years ago, you used to be able to walk all the way down behind the Sheraton to the other side of the pool. All the palm trees down here behind the Outrigger Hotel, all gone. All of this beach, gone. You can see all the foundation from underneath all the hotels and all the jetty walls down here, all just completely gone. So, yeah, lots of erosion.
And I noticed the catamaran pulled up right here along the shoreline. Is that always possible? Has there been any changes you've had to make to the work that you guys do?
We used to pull up right behind the Outrigger Hotel. We had two launch spots down there, but we can't go down there anymore because of the erosion. So now we have to come down here. This is one of our few, of like two options left. So yeah, we used to park down behind the Outrigger, but can't anymore.
Any other thoughts about it, sort of in terms of the dynamics or anything you'd like to see happen?
Well, they redredged Main Beach, but they haven't redredged us. They haven't rebuilt our beach in God knows how many years. And it's nice, you know, for Main Waikiki down there. But if we lose all of our beach, we're going to lose all of our tourism. With no tourism, there's no money in Waikiki. So it'd be nice to be having the beaches built back up. Absolutely. Just go to the Outrigger website. Look at their beach pictures right there on the Outrigger's hotel's website. You can see the huge transition. So yeah, absolutely. People used to set up down here. There used to be umbrellas, chairs, everything down here, but cannot anymore.
We close out our live broadcast from Waikiki by hearing from a veteran lawmaker of the area. Sharon Moriaki has long worked for a more impactful solution to the disappearing sand and beach of the area we know and love as Waikiki.
So Waikiki is the most vulnerable, and also because it's a revenue generator, it's one of the pillars of economic development for the state. So it's important, and it's been neglected, or it was costing too much, and there was no plans. And that's why it's important to see this as a long-term, phased-in approach. We just got the EIS approved, and so now we have a plan. And that's why I'm concerned that, you know, we have short-term fixes that cost money rather than a long-term, sustainable approach that we would put money in that will keep this Waikiki beach having a beach, you know. So it expands from way down from Kapahulu Avenue all the way to the Alawai Small Boat Harbor. So it really is important to look at it long-term and look at it in terms of good money being put into something that's long-term and not just quick fixes, which is what we've done in the past. I'm real concerned that we go in and spend, you know, several million dollars and we have a quick fix, but it really interferes with a longer-term fix. And I would like to look at more sustainable options and look at ways in which we could have a more, what they call nature-inspired, nature-based solution than, you know, those groins or whatever we're putting in the short term, which is not cheap. So let's look at the design. Let's plan this well this time. And then I'd be more than willing to advocate for money to be put into what would be a really long-term solution. That's where I'm heading. I don't like short-term fixes, and then we've got to put money in, good money after bad, and that's what we have there. It's not fixed.
Yes, and the public will have ample opportunity to weigh in on whatever design is ultimately decided on. And now that we have the Department of Business and Economic Development and Tourism involved, you know, for the big picture, that's positive.
So I had money put in a couple years ago. We worked with the University of Hawaii, their architecture school, and the Community Design Center. And so the students were putting together various options and looking at sort of a big picture look at what could Waikiki be. And, of course, they were very visionary. But that's the kind of thinking, because when you talk to residents say, well, fix a pothole, you know. So it has to be framed in a way that what we want is Waikiki Beach to be a beach and a safe way for tourists and residents to enter and enjoy it. So it isn't just a quick fix. So that's what I'm pushing for, is that if I put money in there, I would like to see it go a long way than just fix the problem. I mean, we see it with the Alawai Canal, and I put money in there this session to also look at more sustainable options and a fix that would be long-term. Then every time they have a big flood, the tubes go up, and then DLNR pays $20,000 to somebody to dig up all that trash that comes down from the three streams. So, yeah, we've got to work smarter. We have to really look at the technology that's now available, look at smart people coming together and knowing what the problem is and looking at some good solutions rather than, hey, just fix it for now. I don't care. Just fix it. Get rid of the trash for now. That's not working.
Yeah.
I mean, it works for the day, you know, and the next storm comes and we're all over the same thing over and over and over.
Yeah. So it's really got to be an integrated effort.
Yeah. And they have to understand this is a long-term fix. You can't say just fix it today and just fix it, you know, and it's not cheap to just fix it either. So, yeah, I'm pretty passionate about us doing it right this time. And I don't mind going and advocating for us to do this right and getting money to do it right. But I'm not going to really look at short-term fixes just for the day or for the year and or a couple years and it's back again. You know, we're wasting taxpayers' money.
Yes, and so, yeah, it's got to be a coordinated effort.
A more reasoned approach, a more careful, thought-out, researched approach. A little bit more evidence-based than just, okay, this is the same thing we've done before and we're just going to put more money in the same way. There's a lot of technology out there, you know, international solutions that we should just step back and look at what will make this a long-term solution.
The solution for this whole area really has to be integrated from the Diamond Head end to the Eva end to the Alawai, all
it's
of that.
The whole Waikiki area, right, from Waikiki. So even Alawai Harbor, it's been neglected. And so we're looking at why isn't it? Because it's all in the Waikiki Special District. And it goes from the Ala Moana, you know, that small boat harbor on the other side of the small boat harbor that where that Ala Moana park, that over the bridge right there.
Mm-hmm.
It goes from there all the way to Kapahulu Avenue. That is the Waikiki Improvement District. And they've always neglected coming all the way over. This is the Waikiki Improvement District, not done anything with the small boat harbor, which is part of the special district. And I think it's because it's owned, the jurisdiction of the state, the Department of Land and Natural Resources. So I've been talking with them and saying, okay, let's look at how you would integrate it, because it's the first thing you see when you come in from the airport and you go over the bridge and you see the dirt and you see homeless. And we're starting to clean that up, but it should be green. It should be inviting. There should be, you know, welcome to Waikiki. Let's really look at solving this problem long-term.
That was Senator Sharon Moriaki. She brings up the need to address the Alawai Canal and Harbor. There are several proposals to address those challenges she mentioned about the Alawai, but that will have to be a focus for another day. That does it for us today. We would like to thank the Outrigger Waikiki Beach Resort for hosting us for our broadcast today as we ponder life on the edge in Waikiki. Tomorrow, we plan a Hanaho show around canoe plants. We celebrate the biodiversity that the Polynesian voyagers brought to our islands. Have ideas on where we should go next? Leave us a voicemail, 808-792-8217, or email us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. You can find the conversation as a podcast on Spotify, Apple, or on our website. I'm Catherine Cruz. Join us tomorrow. Pick up the conversation.